Legendary House Speaker Thomas Tip O'Neill is credited for the famous political line, "All politics is local." That appears to hold true even for Democratic presidential candidates as they court voters in Nevada. Though none were born here, they're showing more expertise on some Nevada issues than many of our local experts. State of Nevada contributor John L. Smith joins us to discuss this and other topics from his reporter's notebook. John, welcome back.
Thanks. It's good to be with you.
So, John, the fate of Yucca Mountain as a storage facility for high-level nuclear waste seems an easy litmus test for candidates in Nevada. Has anything, though, come from them that surprised you?
Just over the weekend, you had Bernie Sanders here in Las Vegas in a visit. He was with the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union, rolling out an affordable housing program. Like so many things that Sanders does, it usually has a $1 trillion price tag attached to it. So it's a big ticket item. I think it's $2.5 trillion. A lot of talk about controlling rent nationally, not just in certain cities or communities. So you've got a lot of stuff that sounds really good. I went to his website. I watched his speech on Facebook. It was one of the very few times, and it's folks who are interested in this issue should go to Facebook and find the Sanders speech, because it's one of the few times you will ever hear Bernie Sanders whisper. He hurt his throat momentarily in Colorado, and it had carried over to his speech in Las Vegas. So he's understated almost, and he rarely is that. But the thing that he's focused on is something that's really near and dear to a lot of Nevadans, especially in southern Nevada, where we had a building boom, we had the big foreclosure crisis. So home ownership is a real issue here. It hasn't picked up like some people have believed it would. Construction especially hasn't expanded in the housing market like some folks thought it might. And so you have this question of a renter's community versus an owner's community. And Sanders is hitting on that. That's got to have some appeal.
If Bernie Sanders has a point on affordable housing, and we did talk about that on this program last week, and if you want to listen to that, it's at knpr.org. But if he has a point, is that a winning issue with voters? Maybe it is in Nevada. Do you think it is nationally?
Well, it may not be that as big an issue as, for instance, health care. There's that issue, which is kind of, above all others, it seems. But I think it does resonate with a lot of people who are struggling. And certainly a lot of what Bernie Sanders focuses on, and other candidates do to a lesser degree, I think, he focuses on that struggle. He focuses on that underclass struggle. That's where a lot of his support came in the last election cycle, where he was very competitive in the primary. So I think he's picking up on that. I also think that this is a guy who has that story to tell, raised in Brooklyn in rent-controlled housing, and so that's where Sanders comes from. So, you've got that guy with a story to tell, and you'll notice with all the candidates, they want to personalize everything. They want to essentially localize. In Nevada, we are first in the West for our caucus. A lot of these candidates come to town. They play small rooms. It shows you how important we are for them. They want that name ID out there. A lot of them are really not as well known locally as they are on a national headline focus. So, you've got these folks who are trying to win it kind of one base at a time instead of hitting a home run.
Is Yucca Mountain something I even have to mention as an issue with Democratic candidates, because they all seem to be against it?
Yeah, there's no question about it. Then this is the interesting thing: is you would think that reporters in other jurisdictions, where a lot of these folks come from, and other voters who are being courted elsewhere, East Coast especially, you'd think there'd be a lot more sensitivity to that, because although Yucca Mountain is a very big issue here, there are a lot of places throughout America where the nuclear waste storage from nuclear power plants is essentially at and above capacity. They want some place to send it. And so you'd think that by courting and supporting the undying fight against Yucca Mountain, you would think that might reverberate elsewhere. It hasn't yet, I don't think. But you think down the line, as things get more competitive, you might find other reporting sources drawing out comments about what to do about nuke waste storage back in Pennsylvania, back at near Delaware, where Joe Biden comes from. So you've got a lot of game there, I think, down the stretch.
They made it. They keep it.
Well, you know, that, hey, I'm all for that. It doesn't, that doesn't bother me a bit. I'm just talking about the politics of it. And I absolutely, yeah, you make it. You made the pie. You eat the pie, right?
What aren't you hearing from the candidates as they crisscross the state?
You know, what I would love to hear is, like, you know, the next time the group comes through town, I'd like to hear them pause and say, wait a minute, we've got water issues in the West. We have federal public land debates in the West ongoing. Right now, the Trump administration, through its focus on deregulation, rolling back, essentially talking about handing over federal public land to local state and local authorities and or private interest. You've got a lot of talk on one side of the ledger about that. Some of that's come to fruition already, and others it's more rhetoric. But the Democrats really aren't touching it. Now, it's not that it's not a big issue, because there are a lot of environmental voters. There are a lot of recreation voters, a lot of hunters and fishermen out there who are interested in the status and the protection of federal public land. And it should be, when you go to the West, this is a big issue in the West. It may not be as big necessarily in California with its big population, but you don't want to set foot in Montana, where Steve Bullock is the governor and is running for office. He's running as one of the candidates. So, you know, he's a guy who understands those public land issues. So I would love to hear more from them about water. You know, the Colorado River touches so many lives. And, you know, when candidates come to town, they're talking about other issues. National, yes, of course, healthcare, big tickets. But in the West, we've got our own issues.
State of Nevada contributor John L. Smith is with us with The Dish from his notebook. John, summer is over. But there's a new book out that would fit nicely into someone's late summer reading list. It's called And Then One Day, and it's by local sports book director Chris Andrew. What's it about? Is it any good?
Yeah, it's excellent. It's a lot of fun to read. And you know, you turn on a television on a Sunday morning with the NFL just blowing out the speakers. And you go to any of the sports books, and you know, of course, we talk about it a lot, the expansion of sports betting in America. And it really all comes back to, from the legal end of it, it all comes back to a bunch of intrepid guys who followed regulations, who carved out regulations, who fought against a lot of interesting interests. It wasn't just gaming control that they had to make sure that they follow those rules, but it was also going up against, at times, you know, some shadowy characters from the underworld. And so Chris Andrews is this guy who comes from, if there is sports betting royalty, he comes from it. He's, you know, a man named Jack Franzi, Pittsburgh Jack, they called him. He's from the previous generation of sports handicappers and sports bookmakers. You know, he's part of that family lineage. He's made an enormous name for himself. He also has a hell of a sense of humor. And so he's at the South Point now. And I think this book is something that people will benefit from. Bettors will like it, for sure. Sports fans will like it. And people who are kind of denizens of the Vegas that was and that has transitioned into this corporate era where there's still, he proves to me, there's still some characters out there.
Is it written in an accessible way? Because something about sports books doesn't interest me. It sounds like a bunch of numbers. Yeah. The history of sports books, But if it's written in an interesting way, filled with characters, yeah, I could see
it's anecdote driven. I mean, you're talking about guys with colorful nicknames. You know, there's a cigar side of mouth guy. You know, like that. I mean, right. So you're talking about a real fun kind of Runyon-esque deal from a guy who was there as a young man, now in maturity, is there in this new era where people are, you know. I think they're still surprised. If they were being candid with you, and you got all the local sportsbook directors together, and they said, they would say, wow. This is the whole new world. It's sports betting has taken off like a rocket. Leagues that had so much malarkey rhetoric about, oh, the dangers of legalized sports betting, they're now on board. You know, they're essentially fanboys for the sports books, you know, and the teams themselves. Casinos are doing kind of interactive relationships with teams, with leagues. And so you've got this whole new new era. It's just a new generation.
Does he speculate anywhere in the book about the expansion and whether or not sports betting is passing Nevada by?
Yeah, you know, there isn't a lot of pessimism about coming from him, but there is a question that kind of rises out of the book itself, is that what is Nevada going to do to define itself in a new way, to make a redefinition, when so many states in the union are going to have kiosks where you can essentially bet anywhere at almost any time, what is Nevada going to do next? And that's a real challenge, because technology transfers, right? It used to be knowledge of the handicappers and the sportsbook guys. We were the sharpest people in the country, easily the sharpest people in the country. And technology drives it now so much that technology can be picked up and sent elsewhere. Those games, that style, we're the folks who invented parlay cards and all kinds of hooks and fun gambling, as it were, that can transfer. So what are you going to do next? And it's kind of incumbent upon the industry to come up with what's next. And it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off.
Something else that's happening on the weekend, or at least one weekend, is this huge Rush Area 51 festival. Some are calling it Alien Stock, although that's being legally challenged, or Alien Fest. Now, this is something that began as a joke on Facebook to, quote, rush Area 51 to unearth aliens or down spaceships, whatever they're working on out there, if that's even the case. But it's turned into a real festival this weekend. And as a lifelong Nevadan who's lived in the shadow of Area 51, the top secret base 90 miles to the northwest of here, what do you think of all this?
Oh, you know, it's entertaining as far as it goes. The idea that they're going to rush into, they're not, first of all, no one's going into Area 51 for very long.
I don't think a soul will
be resolved very quickly by the authorities, and nor do they have any business going there. But secondly, the idea that you can go from zero to a festival in rural Nevada so quickly is absurd and dangerous. That's just my opinion. I sound like an old man with belt and suspenders. Get off my lawn.
And people can't see you with the belt and suspenders on.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
I've got actually two sets of suspenders I'm wearing. But that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing to have an oversized camp out. It's another thing to say, they don't have the facilities for it. And it's okay. Next year, they could have facilities for it. They could get the right permits. They could follow some rules. I mean, let's face it. Nevada is this place that really knows how to do a festival. You don't have to look far up and down the strip to find people who know how to do big. You go up north to Burning Man. Now, Burning Man was one of those things that people thought was insane for years, and now it's a huge festival, one of the biggest in the country, and they pull it off in an amazingly safe way for how big and other it is. And so there's a lot to be said for a little bit of planning before you Naruto run into the desert. And it's just like it's got dumb at levels that just won't quit. Now maybe there'll be some bands. I know that there's a group that's going to play downtown. Matty Roberts, who came up with this brilliant idea, I think I don't know what he was doing before he woke up in the middle of the night to punch this into his computer, but we'll just say he was slacking. And it is from that standpoint, it's like it sure looks organic. Although now you've got folks who are trying to market it in a big way to sell their T-shirts and their glow-in-the-dark, E.T. guy. So you've got that going. Good on them next year, But how about plan it once, How about just a little planning?
And by the way, we will have a reporter out there who will give us a report after the event. And John, finally, this website, Wallet Hub, just named Las Vegas, get ready for it, the funnest city in the country. Is it really that fun here?
Yeah, this just in, big news, Las Vegas, you could have a good time here if you tried, right? I think it goes by number of bars per square inch or restaurants, things like that, outdoor pools, toplessness. licentious behavior. I'm not really sure what all the criteria are, but Wallet Hub is one of those things that markets this stuff, and I get a kick out of it. And this is one of those times where, it's hard to imagine Las Vegas not winning this year after year. The year we don't win it, that'll be the next time we talk about this.
John L. Smith is a regular contributor to State of Nevada. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
This is State of Nevada.